Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Larry, thank you for
joining me.
I have admired your work forever and a day. And look, I know we're going to talk about Harry Potter, but people who are watching you right now go, that's Scrooge. That's the guy we've been watching for, what is it, 16, 17?
16 years.
So just kind of a word about, it means you're stepping away from Scrooge this year.
Well, you know, I never planned and I never knew that I'd be doing it for 15 years. You know, it's so deeply embedded in me. It certainly wasn't easy, but I knew something would occur. I thought, I would do this forever, you know. Something, I'm going to have a sign that something will come along that is equally as important.
A magical, mystical sign.
Yes, something magical, but also something that speaks to humanity with hope and light, you know, like that play. And then this kind of happened, and it all happened quickly, and I thought, oh my gosh, this must be it. So I kind of jumped on the train, and luckily I got in. It was with this incredible company of actors and directors. You know,
so this, when you look back at your roles, and I'm very familiar with your career, but the roles you played, Roy Cohn, Angels in America, Scar in The Lion King, mm-hmm. You're not the nicest guy in the shows.
No, it's true.
So this role, one of the roles, you play several in this show. But in this role, you're sort of like, well, you're not the bad guy. We just think you are.
Yes, exactly. Well, for whatever reason, I gravitate toward damaged individuals. Number one, they're fun to play. Number two, they're always very interesting to an audience because there's secrets involved and there's puzzlement at what's going on with this person, like Roy Cohn, and it's usually a darkness, and hopefully sometimes they find the light, like Scrooge, but also Snape. I mean, Snape, we know, and there's a dark side to Dumbledore too. I mean, he's got some stuff with Harry that's hidden and he can't admit, you know. So all that stuff is just gold dust for an actor. And that's why I've been lucky to play these characters. I'd much prefer them, like Scar, you know, talk about damaged. But I think people see that and relate to that and see someone trying to overcome. Either audiences think, oh, they're worse off than I am, and they feel good about it, or they see themselves to some degree, the struggle, which is why I love plays that aren't afraid to show these people who have a dark side.
Is it success for you if at the curtain call you actually, especially a Scar, got booed?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I absolutely love getting booed. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
And do you think, did the Harry Potter producers, did they see you? They obviously know your career, so that's the role they saw for you. Do you ever want to say, you know what, one day I want to play George in It's a Wonderful Life? You know what? Is that a desire for you? You say, no, I'm happy in my lane.
Yeah. No, I think I've been very... I mean, one of the roles I always wanted to play was Roy Cohn. I got to do that, you know. I never thought there'd be a play version of my books that I love, Harry Potter. So, and when I read it, I probably, when I read those books, sort of... you know, was attracted to Snape, of course, because there's like, what's going on with this guy? You know, what's happening?
So you auditioned for that role?
No. I think this was based on, I read for Dumbledore and Snape, but I think what you said is more what happened is people knew, had known my work before. You know what I mean? It was, luckily I had work that people could know. You know, I've been very blessed that way.
An amazing career. You know, just in the middle of it, but an amazing career.
I agree. I mean, you know, I mean, and it's been work, but, you know, I've had so many great opportunities to play really an amazing amount of roles. A lot of that has to do with Chicago. You know,
that was my next question. Yeah. This is, I mean, these are your roots. This is your home. There's a lot of people who say, well, I'm going to make it on Broadway, which you have, and it's like, I must move to New York. You've always, kind of like John Mahoney, you've always said, oh, this is going to be my home.
Totally. Well, I'm from New York originally, but I grew up there. But I didn't plan, I came here to go to the theater school, get my master's. I got lucky and got out of school and got into these really fabulous shows that people kind of noticed. And before I knew it, it's, you know, 30 years later, and I've gotten to do incredible Shakespeare roles. I mean, you know, Tony Kushner, you name it, all over. Writers' Theatre. I mean, so many different fabulous plays. Not to mention, you know, Christmas Carol, which is like who... That role is one of the most, has one of the greatest arcs of any role ever.
And look, people like John Weir, I mean, others who have had that role before, but then you came in, and I think Goodman just said, that's it for life. We found our guy.
They've been, I love them dearly, and they've been, and they treat that show with such respect, and it's really important to me. And you know what? I'd be lying if I didn't say it's sort of simmering right here, and it's never going to go away. You know what I mean? It was too much.
Do you come back to that one day, potentially?
Oh, I don't. I think they probably will move on now. But I would absolutely go back to that at some
point.
Well,
if they're watching, he's just on hiatus.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like it's actually, I am, it's still inside me. I mean, there's no way. It's too late now. It sort of dug a little part out and stayed there.
Close are the characters you play? How close are they to Larry Yondo? I mean, how close are they to who you are? Because I don't think they're... Well, I don't know.
I don't know. I think that I...
Like, if we had dinner, would I hate you by the end of the dinner?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think you'd... Hopefully, I'm not who you think I am when you first meet me. Hopefully, I'm pleasant. Hopefully, I'm smart. And I think a lot of the characters I play are that, but there's always a, like, what am I not seeing here? I'd like to think I have that little mystery, and I like to think that the characters that I play have mystery, so people want to know more about them.
You get to be, I'm assuming for a lot of these folks, you become the Chicago tour guide, right? You're the home base for everybody.
Yeah.
Well, actually, question number one, then, have you yet, or will you soon, has everybody, take us on the tour, take us the boat tour, to, you know, how much are you the Chicago guide for everybody?
Absolutely. Before we came back from New York where we rehearsed, people started saying, I need a list of restaurants. And I did recommend the boat tour and a lot of...
Architectural
boat tour. And it's what I tell everybody. I mean, it's the best thing to do. The most encapsulated, fabulous thing. So I know the first day they had, I went home and took a nap, but all the other people in the cast went on the architectural boat tour and had a great time doing it.
And, of course, with recent battles over the whole pizza thing and all that, there's a new show about Mike Ryko in town where he deals with Chicago, the deep dish, that's not pizza, whatever, but are you sending everybody to Lou Malnati's something?
Well, that's so funny. I don't, because I, of course, have my New York pizza thing, you know.
So you are the folded bite.
I'm the folded, greasy, dripping down my hand bite, yes. In fact, when we went to rehearse in New York 5 weeks ago, the very first thing I did when I got out of my Uber from the airport, I had a costume fitting, and then is I happen to be staying 8th Avenue, 37th Street. I won't forget it. I breathed in the most disgusting smelling air in my life. It was really hot, and it made me so happy. And then I saw a little corner pizza place, and I went immediately there and got two pieces and sprinkled garlic on. And it was so funny to do that.
Raised
now, I happen
dollar.
To love both pizza, and I love Lou Malnati. So I've sort of bridged the gap.
All right. But welcome home to Chicago.
Thank you.
And we're excited to have you here. And I think you're phenomenal. So I just can't wait to see.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. This is some sort of special play. I mean, speaking solely as an actor, looking at a play, do I want to do this play? Absolutely. It's just really surprising, magical, fun, but also really gets me in the gut. It's very moving, and I didn't know that before I read it, so it was surprised me and made me very happy that I got to be involved in it.
Welcome home, Larry.
Thank you.
audience members who aren't as familiar with Harry Potter, let me just have you talk about the characters you play and who they are in relation to Harry and the houses we live in.
Sure. So I play Draco Malfoy. I'm obviously Harry's long-term, I want to say frenemy, because it's complicated. And I'm the father, as far as, you know, this play, in this play, I'm the father of Scorpius. And I would say, yes, the play kind of explores those two relationships in depth.
And as I understand it, by the way, we're going to see different colored hair on you in this play.
You might, yes. We might, yes. We the Malfoys, you know, the hair is important.
It's quite the hair.
That's right. The hair.
It's quite the do. I've got quite a great do as well.
You do too.
Not too dissimilar from what I have right now, but
you're not wearing it now.
But no, but the wigs in this show are astonishing.
Yeah. So tell me about your character.
So I played Jenny Potter, and we went to school. I was 2 years behind Harry in school, so we're all schoolmates, and I am Ron Weasley's younger sister. So Harry and Jenny got together towards the end of the storybooks, and now we're married and have a child, Albus. Yeah.
Were you Harry Potter, and I'm sure everybody asked you this, but were you Harry Potter fans, the books, the movies, whatever, before this all started?
I hadn't been until I got the role, and then I started reading, and I thought, oh, okay, I can get into this. It's definitely its own world, and I'm really glad that I've had the opportunity to do that. Ultimately, to me, I see right through the fantasy. Right, I just see looking at the relationships and the heart of the story. And to me, that is what is sustaining this production for, you know, it started 9 years ago. So there's a reason why it has kept going with such integrity. And I think it's the relationships.
On Broadway, this is a two-parter. This is 2 3-hour evenings.
That's right.
So can you explain? I mean, I'm sure a lot of people did not see it on Broadway, 2 3-parters. So what has morphed to turn this into 1 3-hour?
So that was really the reason why John Tiffany came. And we reworked it. I mean, basically, you know, we went back to the table with our scripts, and obviously him and Jack Thorne made the cuts that they could. I think it did feel like, what's the expression when you let go of something really precious?
Oh, that sounds like a good expression for it. That's letting go of something precious.
Yes, let's go with that. You know, I think it's difficult, and I think the key challenge was to make sure that everything was still a unit and working. I mean, there were two parts in London and for a while in New York, and then now I think it's a 3.5-hour play, and now we cut that even more, and it's under 3 hours.
Right. Is this about, I mean, you're touring now, coming to Chicago for a nice little sit-down.
That's right.
But is that part of what it is? I imagine a 2-evening play.
That's right.
Yeah, it doesn't work. And financially, this makes it more accessible. You can buy one ticket and see the entire story.
Right.
And I feel like this version maintains the integrity and just trims the fat.
Mm-hmm. In some ways, is this the 6 hours down to 3?
I would argue, I haven't seen the two-parter in a couple of years, but I would argue that all the relationships are maintained. It's just some backstory that you're perhaps missing, but it's hard to see the forest for the trees right now. I feel like we tell a mighty good story in under 3 hours, and I think it really makes it a lot more accessible for people to enjoy, because, you know, it's a long evening.
So. And you can enjoy the thing even though you know nothing about the play. You know, it stands.
It stands on its own. Yeah.
I'm sure there are a lot of people coming that haven't read the books or seen the movies.
Right.
It's the nature of things. Mm-hmm. And what people should know is that each year of a Harry Potter book, the characters got 1 year older.
Right.
It's been more than 1 year since the last play.
What are you talking about? What are you saying?
What are you saying? Right.
Exactly.
But is it just sort of 19 years later, so that's the way it is? Or is it important that we are that many years ahead?
Well, I think so. In this case here, I think, you know, where the big change, I want to say, is now we're exploring all these, you know, classmates as parents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're parents, and I think that comes with a huge, as any parent know, and non-parent, a huge set of new challenges and responsibilities. And I think, you know, they were kids for that whole time that we've really watched them. They were kids, and all of a sudden, they're not kids. Some of them, pretty much all of us, had tough childhoods, one way or another. How do we deal with that? You know, and what do we give? What do we, you know, pass on to our kids? That's the question.
You can make a lot of magic happen in movies, and a lot of magic happen in books.
Right.
How about stage? Are we going to get the kind of magic that younger people in the audience and older people in the audience mm-hmm. are looking for?
Absolutely. I think theater in and of itself is magic. I think to tell somebody that you are somebody else and they believe you, that's magic. I think the kind of magic that happens in this show is astonishing. It's quite simple. We have light.
But what I think was very special, if I may...
Yes, as the magician.
Well, that's the thing. I think what's really special is that it's. I used to be a magician, so...
For real. Did you bring anything with you?
Not anything on me, but there's plenty in there. But what's special is that it's not a magic trick as a magic trick. Mm-hmm. So no one's coming on stage and being like, look... Wow, you know what I mean?
Can you do that again?
Only once. But it's part of the story, and I think that's what I think every good magician does. Is no magicians come and say like, look, I have a trick. I just did the trick. No, it's not magic for magic's sake. It's magic because of the story. So we're creating a world.
So I might be guessing here, but you might be the only magician who is taking the stage in the show. I mean, as far as formally working as a magician.
I think so.
If that's the case, I'm curious. Is that at all important? I mean, it's sort of like, it doesn't matter. Or you're like, no, it actually matters that I have that background.
It definitely helped. I found out about 48 hours ago, talking to one of the creatives, that actually I did a magic trick that was part of the story in the audition, and it's partly what got me the job, I found out. And I'm definitely, we work with, obviously, a lot of magicians to do certain things, and a couple of things that I do is really quite difficult. but hopefully you won't see anything. But
you're going to actually see sort of magic on stage.
Oh, there's plenty of magic on stage, which is why it's so special.
Not just necessarily a special effect. I mean, like somebody like you might be doing something that we could be doing here right now.
It's quite possible, yeah, if you turn off a light or two. That's what is so magical about it. It's not... You're right. But it's not a video. It's so simple. It's so theatrical. But you are tricked. Like, my partner has seen it several times and still is flummoxed by certain things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so are we. I mean, even we are on stage and we're like, what?
Yes. It's astonishing.
Never tell their secrets.
Yeah. No.
So in this show, whenever this is happening, does everybody know because it's all in the show? Or is it like, no, there's magician secrets here?
It's magic.
When you play a character who is older or sort of in the books, how did you go back? Did you go back study the book, sort of look to say, how would this character over the last 19 years truly have developed? Or do you just say, no, this is who I am now?
It's a great question, and I definitely think it was worth reading the books to go, okay, this is where they appear in time, and when fans come out and say, oh my God, I love Ginny, I'm like, now I know what they're talking about. But with good writing, the words on the page, you say the words on the page, and that's who the person is right now. And so I'm not trying to pull a character from a novel that was a child. Suffice to say, I'm using my own childhood, and I'm saying the words on the page, and that's sort of who Ginny is to me. And the wonderful thing is, too, we each have two or three understudies, and so whoever goes on for the role, it'll be their Ginny, it'll be their Harry. So this team is quite particular about...
I've seen this several times, it's a different portrayal.
Exactly.
Right.
And but you'll see the essence. No, exactly. You'll never see a rogue magician unless you see.
Well, just before we wrap, I just have to ask you. Welcome to Chicago. You're here. I sometimes describe Toronto as kind of a cleaner Chicago.
Yes,
but we're cleaner New York. So, but just what are you looking forward to doing while you're here? I assume Larry Yendo's given you some places to eat.
Right.
I've started exploring yesterday because we've been having a lot of rehearsals, so we've been very busy. And I took a bike yesterday and I went up the shore, and I went into Lincoln Park.
The lakefront.
Thank you. Sorry, everybody. The lakefront. And the biggest thing that shocked me in the positive way was like the architecture. I've seen houses that I've never seen before. It's so unique. It's definitely not New York. It's also not Toronto. It's a foreign, there's similarities, but it's so Chicago. And I think the fact that you have that lake and you have that sense of, I mean, they're beaches. Yeah. We've got beaches in the city.
A lot of people think that little lake is an ocean.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Your favorite thing, architectural boat tour?
Yes. Done it. Yeah. Love it. It's the architecture. It's the air. It's the people. I'm staying in Pilsen, and I'm just enamored of the neighborhood. Is that you can cross one? It's similar to Toronto in that way. You can cross one intersection. You're an entirely
right.
different world.
And the food,
and the
restaurants.
Food. Oh my gosh!
I feel I'm only starting to explore that.
Make sure your costumes have these little Velcro.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Because you are here. Well, great legs while you're here, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Just talk to me a little bit about what it's like to be playing in a show like this that has been, we've been waiting for so long for it to get here, mm-hmm. and you're lucky enough to have it start the national tour in Chicago.
Yeah.
Your home.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, second home. I think it feels so right to be here, and Chicago as a first destination for our show, it is the city of theatrical inventiveness and heart and imagination, and that's exactly what our show is. And so to welcome smart audiences who are willing to buy in just as much as we're giving and feed the imagination required to turn a suitcase into a train and turn a suitcase into a gravestone and make it float and just like...
So now we know what we're waiting for.
Now you know what you're waiting for. Yeah, and that's scratching the surface, but... Yeah. But it is a magical city and a magical play.
Yeah. And by the way, one of your co-stars, Ben, he's actually a magician.
That's right.
Yes. He's in rehearsal, he wants, before we go on, sometimes he'll pull something out of my ear and then he'll push me on stage. Yeah, he's incredible. He's and he's not just okay at magic, he's really good at magic.
Wow, he downplayed it when I talked to him,
Of course. Yeah.
Well, humility.
I love it. So what is being said here by Emmett is true, because he knows what he speaks. He comes from Chicago. But talk to me about your expectations of playing in a city that is pretty smart and knows theater.
This is our first day at Hogwarts, so to speak, and it is also our character's first day at Hogwarts. So even though I'm new here, I actually called my brother the other day, and he was like, "How's Chicago?" And I was like, "I think it might be perfect. I think it might be perfect." And it's not hyperbole. It's our first stop. It's our character's first time in this world. There's a lot of serendipity happening. There's a lot of convergence. And so it's this really sacred moment. And I feel just so lucky. I feel so excited to be here. And I think hopefully audiences sense that sort of serendipitous convergence. Yeah.
Talk to me about the relationship that you have to the air characters in the show, where you all fit in.
Yeah.
For so people it's, who don't know the Harry Potter.
Yeah, yeah. So it's 19 years after the final book. Mm-hmm. And a lot has not been processed yet by these iconic characters, Harry, Ron, and Hermione, who are now parents, and Draco, who is now a parent.
What do you mean has not been processed yet?
Well, I can't say too much, but there are threads that come unraveled, and there are new...
And we've been waiting 19 years.
And we've been waiting 19 years, so there are some returning dangers, and there are some new dangers that we... as the children of these famous wizards, have to now burden on our shoulders. And it's an enormous weight, but it's also an opportunity.
Yeah. I think every generation casts a shadow on the one that comes next, and I think this is a show about that, about the hope and the fear that comes from that shadow. And I think audiences will really both delight in the magic of this show, and then also grapple with the themes of generational hope and despair and the crumbs that the generations before leave behind. And I think that makes this a pretty special show, in my opinion.
And when somebody comes to me and says, "I didn't read the Harry Potter books, I didn't see the movies, should I see the show?" I will tell them...
Absolutely. You don't need to know a thing about Harry Potter to enjoy Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. We walk through introducing these characters with you, and we are brand new characters to the franchise. So I would say you don't need to know Harry Potter to come to Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. You don't need to be a theater goer to come to the theater. It's such a welcoming play, and it requires you to lean in, but it's all there for the taking.
And when people say, "But I remember this was Daniel Radcliffe, he was a kid, but now he's an adult, whatever. How am I going to adjust to all the kids are now adults?"
You adjust instantaneously. I think the power of theater, there's this quote that you watch movies, you read books, but you feel theater. I think everything is instantly real in theater. So new audiences, old audiences, Potterheads, everyone will come in and feel like they are up to speed immediately, because as soon as someone walks on stage, you go, "That is my accepted reality." I think that is the power of theater, and I think that is the power of this play, that there is a storied history, but there is also a new generation that is coming in.
That's magic.
That's magic.
Turner.